That was American Idiot by Green Day, and this is Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast episode number 101. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. This episode is an interview with Clint Richardson titled The Corporation Nation and is being released on Saturday, January 22nd, 2011. My interview with Clint was recorded on January 18, 2011. The Corporation Nation is the United States of America, U.S. Incorporated. The United States is comprised of over 185,000 incorporated state, county, city, town, municipality, district, council, school district, pension funds, enterprise operations, lotteries, alcohol, monopolies, and many other private and for-profit corporations, which have mistakenly been called our representative government. The hidden wealth and investment totals for all of these collective 185,000 corporations or governments, when added together, equate to well over $100 trillion, over $26 trillion in just pension fund investment assets. $1 trillion is a million million. With these investments, the government owns controlling ownership interest in all Fortune 500 companies, most major domestic and international companies, and most everything you see around you. Malls, mini malls, strip malls, golf courses, theaters, and even apartment complexes. Federal lands include about 87% of all state land, 97% of Utah land, 95% of Nevada land, etc. This is all easily verifiable by looking at the general accounting system of the government as required by federal law called the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, or CAFR. Clint Richardson's The Corporation Nation documentary proves all of this without a shadow of a doubt. As a prerequisite to the show, please also hear my interview with Dr. Patrick Byrne from Overstock.com, which is number 78. And also my interviews with Eustace Mullins, which is Eustace Mullins' last interview, episodes 45 and 46. And you can find out more about Clint's work at thecorporationnation.com and find out more about Walter Burian at CAFR1.com. That's CAFR1.com. And you'll also find Cecil Rhodes' Last Will and Testament up on the website for this podcast for download. And you can also go to the post for this show and watch the entire Corporation Nation for free, as well as on the Corporation Nation website. And again, the new Gnostic Media website has memberships to download the older shows, and you can still get that at a discount. We still haven't had time to get the new schedule set up. And donations, this week's show is dedicated to James, Johannes, Jacob, Jeremy, Jason, Arthur, and Scott. And this show is dedicated to all of you, and thank you so much. And the Gnostic Media Podcast is run on donations and our website sales. We are not corporate media, but independent media in the truest sense of the words. And by donating or ordering one of the books or DVDs or the audio archives or getting a membership or a t-shirt or something, you help to continue this programming. And the Pharmacratic Inquisition DVD has been reprinted, and this is going to be the last printing of it, and we need to get everyone's support in buying those. Right now I'm offering buy 5, get 2 free, or buy 10 and get 5 free, and we need to get those sold as quickly as possible to get the money back that we spent on reprinting them. And we also recommend you stop sending money every month to your local cable companies to pay the corporate media to lie to you every day. Instead, invest in your and everyone else's education by donating and making interviews like these and projects like these happen, and not just here, but for all quality independent media. And for next week's show, it looks like John Martineau from Wooden Books and co-author of the Quadrivium book and several others will be here, and that's one you won't want to miss. And also we have upcoming Peter Gorman regarding his new book, Ayahuasca, Miguel Connor from Aeon Byte regarding his new book, Professor Bart Dean from Kansas on his work regarding the Urania. And once again, support this program by going to the Gnostic Media website and ordering one of the books or DVDs or She Who Remembers audio archives, t-shirt, membership, etc. We greatly appreciate your support. The views expressed by the authors and guests of this program are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself, the host, or Gnostic Media. The website, www.gnosticmedia.com. That's GNOSTICmedia.com. And you can contact me on the contact form on the website or directly at contact@gnosticmedia.com. Thanks for listening, and thank you for your support. Clint, welcome to the Gnostic Media Podcast. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, and I watched your documentary a few weeks ago. Richard Andrew Grove had sent it to me and asked me to watch it and let him know what I thought, and I was completely mind-blown. I've fallen a lot of the sovereign citizenship stuff since the early mid-90s, and I've known about a lot of this information for many years, but you actually really took the information and you went from implicit knowledge to explicit knowledge, and you've really done an excellent job in piecing all of your work together. So I applaud you on that, and your documentary, which I forgot to mention, is The Corporation Nation. So anyway, welcome, and why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about who is Clint Richardson?
Well, sure. First of all, I'm very pleased that that this thing has gotten around to people like you. And basically, I did this as a free service to humanity because as Walter Burian, who is pretty much the master of this information, has been trying to share this and put this into people's consciousness for 20 years now. He was actually an original tenant of the World Trade Center as a stock commodities trading advisor, a big head of the stock market. And once he learned this, he sort of like my story, he kind of dropped out of the market per se and focused just on this to try to inform people. And for that, he's been extremely let's just say that the government's gone after him without prejudice. They've kidnapped his kids, shot his dogs. He's had people killed next to him in prison as a message. This is, without a doubt, the most important secret that government has with regards to actual information that it gives to its people. And so with that, basically what happened with me is that I was you could say I had a crisis of conscience, which I'm really hoping that more people have here in the future. Probably the best thing that ever happened to me. I was in Hollywood as a professional sound editor, sound designer, so I was putting all the sounds to movies and games and commercials and that sort of thing. And the last game I was working on was a game called Resident Evil. Great thing, the whole zombie zombie genre. But what I found as I was doing it, as with other games especially, and movies too, is that they were so darn violent, and that the creatures that I was working on, because I would pretty much put the voices and the footsteps and all that to the creatures, were so demonic and so just outrageously evil and gory and just horrible. So I kind of started getting the idea that something was wrong here. This shouldn't be what entertainment is. One day I was listening to the radio show and while I was in my office, and a guy came on. He was talking about his job in the military, and what he would do is he would leave his family in the morning, and lived on the military base with his family. He would go into the base, and he would sit down in what could only be explained as a video game booth, and he would grab the controls, and he would look at the screen, and he would proceed to fly the drones that are being flown in Iraq and Pakistan, Afghanistan, and he would proceed to kill, bomb innocent men, women, and children with a hit ratio of who they're actually trying to target of like 3%. Everybody else is collateral damage. And he would go and he would do that like an 8-hour job, 9-to-5 job, 5 days a week, excuse me. And then he would go home to his family as if it was just another day at the office. Very similar to just going in and playing a video game, killing a bunch of fake people, except the difference is that these are real people. And I started looking at what I was doing and adding these sounds and making these sounds, things just sound so, gory and gruesome and evil. And I was good at it, and that bothered me. And so at some point, I just decided I couldn't do it anymore, and I gave my notice. And I decided that I was going to use my particular set of skills to let's face it, my documentary is free. I decided that I wanted to try to help people comprehend some of these things. And I contacted Walter Burian, was my first thing that I wanted to do, because I knew that he was poor. I knew that he'd been just, like I said, beat down by trying to expose this stuff. And so I called him and actually sent him a message and told him that I was interested in helping him out, that I was a pro sound guy. I could get a video guy because I didn't know that much about video at the time. And we proceeded to make a documentary called The Biggest Game in Town, or I believe is the name of it, The Biggest Game in Town, which is on the CAFR1.com website. And that was Walter explaining, like he usually does for the last 20 years, what's going on with the comprehensive annual financial reports within government. And, I consider myself absolutely one of the most fortunate people in the world, because I got to know him, and I got to break down his barriers and really talk to him and really comprehend what we're going to talk about for the next hour or so. This is by far the most important information anybody can know with regards to how we are governed and how the financial structure and the corporate structure of America and its government is set up. So that brought me to the documentary, where one day I got so fed up trying to tell people what the CAFR, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, was, that I decided to just go for broke, and I spent 2 months straight just putting this thing together and putting these forms in, going and taking pictures of the actual reports and just figuring them out for myself, because I consider myself a novice compared to Walter Burian. I don't have a financial background. I don't have anything with the stock market. I understand that it's kind of a hoax, but basically I took my personality is to be very logical and very as you explain with the trivium, is to base things in as much in fact as I possibly can, with as little speculation as I can, and that kind of led to The Corporation Nation. I released this documentary, The Corporation Nation, and again, you can see that on thecorporationnation.com. It's absolutely free. I didn't do it for profit. In fact, I haven't made a red cent off it in the several months that I've been trying to really promote it as much as possible. And I've been very fortunate, because it's been passed around to several key people who've also put it forward in a way that's, it's got it to people like you. It is also for sale. At this point, I told people it's nonprofit. You can't sell it, but this guy at the Dollar DVD Project is actually selling it for $2, the cost of reproducing it and stuff. So I said okay to that. It's been passing around, and that's a good thing. And I'm pretty happy with the response. The only response I've really gotten that was negative was that it was too long. But I felt that it was necessary to just really go into detail as much as possible. It's not meant to be a Hollywood production. It's meant to be an absolute educational tool.
Right. So, and what you can always do is later on, you have this 3-hour version out. Later on, you can always go through and edit a more succinct version where you just, hit each point once, where you don't go into as much detail on it. And you can still reach a larger audience that way.
Absolutely. And that'll be in the works eventually. And also, really, more importantly, I want to spend about a week with Walter, just asking him all the questions that people ask me And again, I think if I have a talent, it's translating what professional people say and what lawyers say and what all these people say into things that people can understand. And so I'm trying to use that talent, again, crisis of conscience, trying to educate people, you know, to the betterment of society. With that, let's talk about government. Let's talk about,
All right. Well, let me ask you, what does collective government mean, and how is the corporate government set up?
Right. Basically what we've got here, let there be no doubt in anybody's head that governments are not corporations. What we've got, collectively, when you put all of these corporations, and keeping in mind that there's, Walter says about 185,000 different governments within the whole of the United States, Guam, you know, all the little outlets, Puerto Rico, and collectively they make one giant government. So when we use the term collective government, we're talking about all of the state, county, city, or municipalities, townships, anything else that cities are called. They're all corporations or municipality. They're incorporated. Your water districts, your sewer districts, your school districts. You know, the list goes on and on of what qualifies as a government or a separate corporate entity. Now, you can have the conversation, the semantic argument about what type of corporations each one is. The important part is that they are corporations. In fact, the area where I live is Salt Lake City or Salt Lake County. I live in Draper, a city or a municipality within the county of Salt Lake County. So my corporation is called literally the Draper City Corporation. The main city in Salt Lake County is Salt Lake City. If I want to go do anything, I have to go to the Salt Lake City Corporation office. It's actually called that, which really surprised me because I never lifted my head up and looked, but it's actually called the Salt Lake City Corporation. There's a big sign out there. You can go in the office and talk to him. It's where all of your bills, all of your, if you get a traffic ticket, if you get anything, it's going through the corporation, the corporate structure that is the incorporated city or municipality. And so what we have is collectively over 185,000 different government corporate entities within the United States. Okay, very important to understand because again, the semantic argument about what type of corporation doesn't really matter because what we're talking about is the government is the one that's making the rules. Okay, they're the ones that pass the laws. They're the one that enforce the laws. So to say that their corporate structure is anything, you know, less significant than a Fortune 500 corporate structure is absolutely mind-bogglingly ridiculous because it's the worst case scenario because it's the corporation that is making the laws for corporations, which is a very scary concept when you think about it because there's really no government above government to regulate these government corporations. And they are listed,
right.
They're listed on Dun & Bradstreet and all these other sites as private companies.
So they have these city corporations and municipalities, they would have stockholders and everything.
That's something I haven't even figured out. I've had that question asked to me several times, and I've even asked Walter about that, and it doesn't really sound like there are stockholders per se that are actually holding the stock of municipalities. I don't know for sure, honestly. What I have learned is that this is not necessarily it's a communicative effort, meaning it's a syndicated cooperation between government, between corporations, regular private for-profit, Fortune 500 and other corporations, the syndicated media. It's a big cooperative effort, but more than cooperative, it's a symbiosis. It's the government, excuse me, all of these collective governments across the country hold stock investments into these Fortune 5 corporations. So when I look, if I were to spend the time, and it would probably take me a year just to pull up all the comprehensive annual financial reports, request from the government all of the information, but if I were to finally get all of that, I would see that government owns collective stock investments, meaning all of the 185,000 different corporations that are governments collectively own controlling stock within all Fortune 500 companies, many, many international companies, as well as smaller corporations. We're also talking about golf courses. We're talking about malls, movie theaters. These are enterprise operations. They build condos. Our government is building condos all over the world. There's so many aspects to this that it's really frightening in its implications. So what I did in the actual documentary is to just on the actual CAFRs for pension funds, they actually have the top 10 stock holdings, and they're also invested in real estate and securities, mortgage-backed securities. They actually lend money like a bank. I mean, it's a huge business. With billions and billions in profit each year, aside from 2008, 2009, where the stock market fell. Let me just, you know, I've been researching because since I did the documentary, the recent 2010 Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports have come out for government for fiscal year 2010. Now, most of my information was fiscal year 2009. And that was when the government was coming off of a couple bad investment years.
Can you explain exactly what the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report is?
Sure. It's actually a federal law that all corporations, whether they be government or other, must file the annual report. It's sometimes called the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Sometimes it's called Financial Statements. It can be just called Annual Report, but it is with government, the difference between the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, which is not given to the public, and the taxpayer budget, which is given to the public and shown every year, it's what they base their budgets on. It's basically the taxpayer budget only accounts for tax in or tax collected from the people and tax out. So when you see the budget and when you see that every year the budget is, you know, they're spending more money than they're taking in, and therefore they have to raise taxes, raise property taxes and all that, they're not showing you the full report or financial report, which is the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Now, in the Comprehensive Report, you see everything else. You see all of the investments. You see several different funds. For instance, the city of Detroit has about 32 different funds. They can be designated for construction, for land beautification. They can be structured to build a mall. They can be structured for all kinds of different things. The point is there's money, extreme amounts of money hidden within these funds and hidden within government. The report actually shows a great majority of this. For instance, I pulled up the Salt Lake County Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, and just one fund, which is a state fund that's not reported in any way except on the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, is $300 million just in the state investment fund. And that's sitting there. It can be used. All they have to do is give, I think, a couple-day notice that they're going to withdraw more than $2 million, and that money can be used for anything. It can be used to pay any budgetary obligation. And that's the case with all cities, counties, and municipalities. That's states, excuse me. They all have this money hidden within these investment funds. And it's not necessarily hidden, it's just not reported to the taxpayers. It's only reported on the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, which is the full financial statement of each individual government. Keeping in mind that the state is separate
where,
from the county.
If the governments don't have stockholders, then where is all that money going that they're profiting?
It's a good question, and something that I haven't gotten far enough to really comprehend. I do know that it's being invested in other countries. I do know that there's major discrepancies when it comes to these reports. One year it'll say one thing and it'll end at a certain balance.
So maybe like, you know, you have these city governments and, you know, they invest in some corporation or some company to scratch their friend's back. And so is that how they filter the money back out?
I wouldn't say that they're scratching anyone's back because literally they control these corporations. When I say that they have controlling investment, in other words, they have over 50% of the stock in all of these corporations. So they literally own those corporations and collectively, because it's not all in one government, it's all over the whole spectrum of government corporations across America, we can see that in their own reports they say that we vote through proxy vote because we have the control, we have this stock. You know, CalSTRS has 30 million shares of Microsoft stock, and therefore it gets that many votes towards the company's what they call corporate governance or the way that each of these governments vote for things like mergers and acquisitions, everything that happens. The board of directors, they vote on who is going to be the board of directors, and of course the board of directors votes on who is going to be the CEO of the company. So government has control and of everything that happens within the Fortune 500 stock of corporations, because it votes on all of these proxy issues that come up with the board of directors. So scratching a friend's back is an understatement. This is complete ownership of the corporate structure of America, thus the corporation nation.
Right, but what, you know, what I'm getting at though is, you know, they're okay, so they literally take ownership of this company and then they're bringing in all of this money and sucking these companies and society dry, but is there, I'm just trying to figure out who, you know, the money has to be going upwards to some place. And so, you know, I'm just trying to figure out where
Yeah, most people want to think of this in a way that you think of a shadow government, the shadowy elite who are running things. And I have no doubt that those people exist. I think we can all agree that the Rothschilds are quite prominent within the world economy. But that's not really what we're talking about. What we're talking about, and this is a very important concept to get, because this is a collaborative effort. And it's people that are doing this. People, you know, what has happened with what's happened with government and with the corporate workforce is that we have lost something called ethics. We've lost morals and we've lost values, especially when it comes to business. In fact, I would argue that you cannot get ahead in government or in any type of corporate structure without lying, cheating, and stealing your way to the top.
I would certainly agree with that.
Okay, so what we have is a situation where people, if they do go and work for government, are either a part of the corporation or are not a part of the corporation. If you don't agree, if you have this crisis of conscience, which I'm hoping people will start having, and you say, I can't be a part of this, you're hoarding trillions and trillions of dollars from the people while you let them starve. I don't want to be a part of this. I actually call for a boycott of everything that is government, and that includes all of their corporations that they own through stock investment. The important thing to understand, though, is there's a lot of people out there that are only interested in getting ahead. They're interested in feeding their family and supporting themselves, and to do that, you become part of this corporate structure because you know, it's really hard to really get into business for yourself now because every aspect of business and all the products are pretty much spoken for. And if you want to get into business, you have to sell to Walmart and Toys R Us and all these big corporations that pay you pennies on the dollar. And so the majority of us have to go work for these big corporations in order to get any type of you know, get ahead in any way. You really have to give up your soul. You have to give up your morals and your values, and you have to forget ethics, because ethics have no place in the corporate structure. The purpose of a corporation, any corporation, is to make a profit. Generally, they say the purpose is to make a profit for the shareholders. In this case, I honestly wish I could answer who the shareholders are, but as far as I can tell, it's just people.
It's right, just, you know, opportunity. And I think one of the ways that they deal with the ethics issue is to compartmentalize so much that very few people are allowed to see the big picture of what's really going on.
Absolutely. And it's important. What's important about the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report is that it is a cumulative look at government. And so an answer to your question would be, if you do look at these reports, you can see they generally list the last 10 years. Sometimes they list the last 30 or 40 years of how it's grown. And you can actually see that it started at a couple $100,000. And over the years, every year it gets a little higher. And now, you know, the assets of Salt Lake County are $6 trillion. Excuse me, $6 billion. And, so you can actually look at these reports and see how your government has grown. You can see how the pension funds have grown. And you can also catch discrepancies where one year it has this much money and then all of a sudden it drops. And you're like, well, what happened there? And so, like I said, the important part of the CAFR is that it's a cumulative representation of money. So if you just look at the taxpayer budget that they put out for the people, that's only showing this year. It doesn't show anything that the government has saved or invested. And so you're looking at the report and you see, well, you know, wait a minute. You say that you're short this year, but this year you had you had a surplus of $300 million. Why aren't you using that? And the next year you had a surplus of $350 million. The next year you had a surplus of $500 million. And over the years it's gotten up to over $1 billion that you have extra that you've been just putting in these funds and building wealth. It really is opportunity. You start a fund and you say it's to build a bridge in 10 years, and you add to that fund and you invest that money, and all the taxpayer money goes to build the bridge, but all the extra money that's made on investment, interest, anything else goes somewhere else. It goes into other funds to build more wealth. I think, honestly, Jean, I think the best answer I can give you for who is controlling, I don't think there's any way to know who the real top people are, who the beneficiaries of this is going to be, until bankruptcies start happening and you can follow the money to where all these assets and ownership of stock ownerships are going to go. I think that's the only way that we'll really know who's pulling the strings, is when you see a bankruptcy or when you see a collapse of the system, or the illusion of a collapse. And then you'll find out who's taking control of all these assets, because, you know, very important, when people are donating their money to these pension funds, they have no interest or equity in the money. When the municipality declares bankruptcy, or the county or the state declares bankruptcy, those state pension funds, which are in the billions of dollars, are gone. They are, you know, just like any bankruptcy, that it's going to be gone. You're going to lose your pension. You're going to lose any retirement dreams that you had simply because you trusted in this system. So I think that's really the only way that we're going to find out who, you know, where does that money trail go when a municipality collapses? And that's pretty much the best answer, I think, that I have.
I just saw a news article a couple of days ago. I think Richard Grove sent it to me that municipality bankruptcies are going to be on the rise.
Yes, and again, what I want to tell people is that that is complete BS. It is not true that municipalities are bankrupt. It is not true that they're not hiding money and not reporting it to you. What they're basing that article on, and he actually sent that article to me. What they're basing that on is the taxpayer budget, because people don't know enough to look at the comprehensive annual financial report, nor do they have the time or the knowledge to figure out what each of those statements on that report means. So we're being lied to in a big way when they say that municipalities are broke or that pension funds are underfunded. It's not true. In fact, let me read you. Now, bear with me here. I'm just going to read you some numbers because, like I said, the comprehensive annual financial reports for 2010, or fiscal year ending June 30th, 2010, for most of them, have come out just in the last few days and weeks. And so I just want to read you how much profit these pension funds are actually making, because I've spent the last 5 days or so going through and pulling them all up for part two of my documentary. First of all, understand that the way a pension fund works is it's a contributory system, meaning that you are contributing your money as an employee to the fund, having no equity in your money, and letting it build wealth. You're not doing it yourself. You're letting this corporation do it for you. The money that the employees put into the fund goes right back out to pay beneficiaries. So none of the money that is being contributed by employees technically is being used to actually invest and gain profit in the pension fund. So we can just eliminate what is contributed by the employees. Now, for every employee, the employer both matches what the employee contributes and also adds several, you know, some of them, you know, add 200, 400, 600, or 1,000% more than the employee is contributing. So every employee that the government hires, they're going to contribute to the pension fund in the amount of, you know, absolute massive amounts of money. So every employee is going to cost the taxpayers $3 million, not just the $50,000 that gets spread around for, you know, health insurance and that sort of thing. So you've, in other words, if the employee contributes $10,000 in a year, the government can contribute anywhere from $20,000, to $50,000 to $100,000 into the pension fund for each employee. That has nothing to do with the employees. That is strictly a Ponzi scheme to take taxpayer money and put it into these pension funds. In other words, if you work for the state government, the county government, whatever government, and I'm telling you that the government is also contributing on behalf of the employee to the fund, that is taxpayer money, because what funds government but taxpayer money? So the taxpayers are paying outrageous amounts of money to fund these pension funds. Okay. Now, here's what's been happening as of 2010. Keeping in mind that 2007 and 2008, a little bit into 2009, were kind of rough years. The stock market fell, as we all know. But since then, the stock market's raised about 4,000 points. So I'm just going to read you a list of some of the more large pension funds, and I'm just going to tell you how much profit they made in 2010. Okay? Let's start with CalSTRS, California State Teachers Retirement System, which is the prominently featured in the documentary. They made an $11.3 billion profit in the pension fund. That is a return on investment after all benefits are paid. And this whole list is a list of just profit after all benefits are paid to retirees. Texas Teachers Retirement System made a $7 billion profit, and that's as of August 31st. 2009, I believe. Washington State Retirement System, $5.7 billion. Illinois Teachers Retirement System, $2.8 billion. Los Angeles County, okay, this is just the county, has nothing to do with the state retirement system. Just the county alone in their employee retirement system made $2.9 billion as a return on investment. Mississippi, Employment Retirement System, $1.8 billion. Let's get to some of the bigger ones. New York State and Local Retirement Fund, $23.3 billion profit. Ohio Public Employees Retirement System, a $10.3 billion profit. Oregon, Public Employees Retirement System, $5.7 billion. Virginia Retirement System, $4.9 billion. Just the New York City Employee Retirement System made $3.4 billion. So that's the five boroughs of New York City and all of its employees, or some of its employees, I should say, because there's several funds, $3.4 billion. So I could go on and on, but I won't. The idea here being that this is where the money is being held. All of the return on investments, which is what I just read, has nothing to do, or very little to do, I should say, with actually paying the ongoing benefits to employees. If you were to take the majority of these pension funds and just sell all of the assets outright right now, they could pay benefits for their employees for the next 15 to 30 years. So what we're talking about is a grand lie. When you see reports that pension funds are underfunded, when you see reports that cities, municipalities, states, and counties are underfunded, you're talking about one of the grandiose, most grandiose lies you've ever come across, because the government literally has trillions.
Are there cases with, say, small towns or cities where they might be in trouble, or is it across the board? You see them all in profit?
Of all the reports that I've pulled up so far for 2010 and the later part of 2009, I haven't seen any cities or municipalities, or states for that matter, that are in necessarily in the black. Now, some of these reports are a little hard to read because they will report that the general fund is in the negative. And that could mean anything. That could mean that they just spend a lot more money than they usually do. Generally, they like to spend the money, because if they don't spend the money in the general fund or transfer it out into other funds, then they have to account for it. And so for the most part, there's one sentence in the comprehensive annual financial reports under the financial section that generally states that the assets of the government, whichever one it is, exceed its liabilities by this amount. Generally, that's in the millions. And so, again, a cumulative look at what government has is what you would find, and you'll find that over the years the government has saved this much. What they're reporting to you is only the yearly budget, once again, and so they're going to use that to lie to you.
Okay, say, so well, let me ask you, what is the difference between the CAFR and the budget report?
Budget report is simply taxpayer money. They collect the taxpayer money and they spend the taxpayer money. They include a few other things in there, but for the most part, that's all it is. The budget report that the taxpayers see, it only accounts for taxpayer money. Okay? In other words, the money that's collected for that year from the taxpayers. It does not include any of the accrued money and accrued interest, accrued anything from their investments. It doesn't show the investment accounts. It doesn't show the funds that the majority of the money is hidden within. That the taxpayer budget doesn't show anything but taxpayer information. That's all they feel they need to tell you. And that's the scam.
All right. Since you just mentioned this, how does the government hide the money and the funds?
Well, to say it's hidden is not really accurate. What, as I said, the people, in other words, you and me, who do not know about the comprehensive annual financial report, what's really hidden is the comprehensive annual financial report. It is never talked about in media. It is never talked about, very seldom is it talked about in any public forum regarding government. And if it is, the senator or congressman who brings it up is generally found with a hooker in a week later, if you know what I mean.
You right.
Know, there is no
or dead
or dead plane crash, whatever you want to, you know, you cheated on your wife, you found overdosed on drugs, whatever. It's not talked about in any open way, which is why when Walter started talking about it, you know, eyes got big and they shut him down as best they could without killing him, because you know, you don't want to start a martyr. So the real hidden aspect of this is the full report. We get a little teeny part of the report, which accounts for anywhere from 5 to 20% of the actual income that government has.
You know what, let me ask you this. Has anyone sued to get the full comprehensive financial report so that they can see where the money is going
to? You don't need to sue. It's federal law. Anybody can pull up the comprehensive annual financial
report. But you were saying that a lot of these states and municipalities, they'll release two different reports, one right. where for the public and then one for themselves. But how do we get in there to find out where all of this money is going? Because obviously, if at CAFR 1, if they can do these tax retirement projects where the city has to funnel that money back to the people and stop taxing people, then that means that money is there and it has to be somewhere. That, you know, I'm just
no, I understand, and it's very important. Biggest part of the puzzle is that this needs to change the exposure and the revealing of these reports, and the knowledge that they are there and that anybody can look at them needs to be put out there, and that's what Walter and me are trying to do. Walter and I, excuse me. His tax retirement fund is based on the pension fund model. And the idea, because pension funds, but without a doubt, are the most, obviously, after that list I just read you, are the most profitable forms of investment structure there is. And there's a good reason for that. You're basically talking about a government that's investing in the corporations that it literally owns through stock investment and that it decides what's going to happen within those corporations. And so it's almost like insider trading. So chances are these pension funds are always going to be making a massive killer profit. The difference, what Walter wants to do, and which I support full-fledged, I have no affiliation with him except I'm fortunate to call him a friend, but he wants to start this tax retirement fund, and basically what that'll do, modeled after the pension fund, is to create this wealth that's in these pension funds through voter approval, but put it in a different type of fund that will actually fund the city and its operations, its government, its parks, its everything that happens within the city. A good example would be a school district. If you took a school district and you started one of these tax retirement funds, the fund itself would eventually, once it built up its value, like the rest of these pension funds, would eventually be able to fund the budgetary obligations of the school system.
And so then they wouldn't have to go around with guns every year and extort money out of people that own homes so that
right.
they can pay for the schools.
You wouldn't need to pay taxes for if you did it in a school district. The school district would be taken care of simply by the investment income and return of that fund. You would not need property tax to pay for school. If you did that for your municipality, your particular city, eventually, not right away, but eventually it could be funded by the fund. Now, the biggest argument against this is that you're just contributing to the problem. In other words, we know that you're investing in these corporations. And most people will say, well, wait a minute, we want to stop that. We want to stop the corporate governance. We want to stop the – but the deed is already done. In other words, government is already in the position where it owns the majority of all corporations out there. It has invested in their stock to the point where it has controlling ownership. Okay, that deed is already done. So and they're already voting on what's going to happen with regards to corporate governance. You know, you're, like we said earlier, your mergers and acquisitions, your board of directors, your CEOs, the government is the one voting for that within Microsoft, for instance. Okay? So we already know that's happening. That's not an issue anymore. That's already happening. The point that Walter wants to do is say, okay, well, let's build these funds in a way that promotes less government. In other words, if you're a fund manager and you can get government down to half the size, you're going to make a little more money yourself, okay? Because that's why people are in this in the first place, is to make money. they're fund managers. They're investing this money in a way that's going to give them a return on investment. So why not change? Basically, what he wants to do is change the beneficiary. Right now, the beneficiary is not the people. Okay, all this money is sitting there within the government, not being shared with the people, not being used to pay the ongoing budgetary obligations of the people. It's sitting there in these funds, building wealth. And when the time comes, I can pretty much guarantee you, as we talked earlier, that they're going to declare bankruptcy. They're going to do something where that money just disappears. And it's not going to go to the people. Instead of having that be the case.
So what you're talking about is basically two different types of government here. One is a system of government that is a drain on the people and suppresses the people and milks them dry, whereas the other type, based on Walter's tax retirement plan, would actually be a real, like, Republican, not in the sense of Democrat-Republican, but Republic form of government, where the government is there to serve you and it doesn't need to bleed you dry because it's already doing these investments because it exists, and therefore out of that it should be able to fund everything.
It should, and you should not have to pay any taxes for anything ever again. Now that sounds like a pipe dream. The reality of it is the way that it's set up and the way that it would actually become a law is that you would put this up for the vote of the people. In other words, you could go to your school district or your municipality, and you could get whatever it takes to put a – in California, it's – you're in California, is that correct?
Yes.
In California, it's a proposition. So you could get a proposition or a local initiative going saying that we want to start a tax retirement fund to fund our city or to fund the school.
So now, where have these tax retirement funds – sorry to interrupt you – where have they – been implemented already?
That's the problem. They haven't. It takes – Walter can't do it by himself. It takes – it's going to take people like you and me to do it, to actually
go – make the people aware enough so that we can get these stuffs on the – these things on the ballot and get them passed. So
exactly.
Nobody has anyone written an initiative to try to get it on the ballot?
You know, a good example, there have been times when governments have acted in this way, but they always, you know, are corrupted to the point where that stops happening and suddenly there's a deficit. A good example of that is where Walter lives. They were doing that down in St. John's and down in Arizona. Alaska is sort of set up that way because the people actually get a return on
a check
on the tax.
From the oil investments, correct?
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's a little bit – that's not what we want because that's more corruption than it appears, because they're pretty much getting paid off to allow their beautiful, you know, countryside to be raped by oil companies. But that's – you know, the idea behind this is to pass a law. And the important thing – the problem with the whole patriot and freedom and reconstruction movement is that there's no law back. We don't have anything backing us. We don't have any – structure of law that we can say, hey, if you don't change your moralless ways, if you don't become ethical in government, you're going to go to jail. And that's what Walter wants to do. He wants to pass this tax retirement fund, but because people are voting on it, you'd actually vote in a whole new set of law that states if you do anything, if you steal from this fund, if you invest it in any other way than what his tax retirement fund association says you should, then you're going to jail. You do not have the option to steal from people anymore. You do not have the option to be a crook in government because the new law states that if you do, you're going to go to jail. And that's very important because, as I said, we don't have law behind us. We only have the law of the government. Well, the government operates outside of the laws in which we are forced to operate. How do we win that battle? We can't. So the idea is to get the people together, go door to door, explain the tax retirement fund, you know, whatever you want to call it. If it's not Walter's solution, whatever it is, we need to do something to get law on our side. Once we have the law, then we have the power to go and say, all right, you're doing something corrupt. If you don't change and you don't start working for the people instead of the corporations, you know, and this shadowy elite, whatever, you're going to go to jail. You know, and the other very important aspect of this whole thing is transparency. As we've discussed, you know, the government is not very transparent with what it gives to the people. It only gives them the taxpayer budget, does not give the comprehensive annual financial report. You have to be in the know to actually not only retrieve the report, but also to understand what the report's saying. So transparency becomes an extremely important issue, because I can't just go into the government and I say, oh, I want your bank account. They're not going to give it to me. Well, what kind of government do you have if you do not have complete and utter transparency? You do not have a representative government in any way if they can hide anything from you. And that's the other aspect of this. His tax retirement fund, part of the law, would open all of the books. In other words, you go in, you take over, you open the books, you follow the money trail, you see where all this money has been transferred over all these years, and you start following the money trail, and it becomes a federal or a state or a local law, chances are it'll be a state law, I believe, that says you must open the books, you must show us all of these financial things that have happened. And at that point, you know, the cockroaches are going to be running away. You know, there's not going to be there's not going to be the opportunity that there was in government. If you're going to be in government, you're there because you want to be there and you want to help people. And I think that's really all that's his life dream, is to change the structure of government. It can remain its corporate structure, although I'm not too in agreement with that. I think all corporations need to be dissolved and set up in a different way. But
yeah, corporate personhood is a disaster.
Oh, it's a big disaster, and that's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, well, you know, and let's, you know, we'll I'd like to go into that here in a little bit. In fact, I'd like you to discuss Delaware and things like that as well before we're done here.
Sure.
It seems to me that not only should these comprehensive annual financial reports be open and standard knowledge to everyone, and this tax retirement plan in place, but it seems to me that, you know, and just like we were talking about Alaska a minute ago, is, you know, every quarter or every fiscal year you should be getting a dividend check.
Well, you could set it up that way. But I think the idea that Walter has is, instead of returning the money to the people, build up the fund as quickly and as largely as you can, to the point where that fund is self-sustaining, meaning people no longer have to pay into it. There's no taxes. All the returns on investment go to whatever it is that the city. If you want to build a new park, you know, it's more important to me, instead of getting a $2,000 check every year, I would much rather have someone in government that is a statesman or interested in, you know, the idea of the fund is to pay for land improvements and everything that government is supposed to be doing now, potholes, all the things that we have but aren't getting fixed. Instead of giving it back to the people, the idea is to keep that fund growing until the point where it's able to sustain itself and pay for everything, so that taxpayers never have to pay anything to the government again to keep operating. And meanwhile, you can see what the government's doing because you have complete and open transparency. If I, as a citizen, catch one of my government officials doing something dirty, I can turn him in and he will immediately be put in jail. I mean, what better way of governing can there be than that system, which is already in place? Like you said, it's modeled after the very successful pension funds. And then his other idea is to make sure that the majority of the fund is either invested within the state or within the county or within the actual city or school district or whatever it is. That way you have money staying within the municipality or the area, and so it's not being drained and being sent overseas or being drained into these funds. You have a constant influx of dollars going into government and right back out into the community. So there's a lot of benefits to it, and not really anything that's negative. The only negative part is you're fighting a massive corporate machine that's already set up and does not want this to happen. So,
well, that's for sure.
So that's a pretty big negative, I guess.
Right. Well, you know, and that's why it's so important to, as you mentioned the trivium at the beginning, that's why it's so important to give people critical thinking so that they can see this stuff and wake up to it. And the more people that wake up to it and wake up within government as well, I think we'll get to use the old fallacy of the 100th monkey, right?
Yeah, well, and keep in mind, you know, I've heard several stories of people, you know, especially from Walter, where they'll go, you know, I'm a representative of my city, and I go and I ask someone much higher than me about the comprehensive annual financial report, and they look at me and they say, you do not want to pursue this. Leave it alone. You know, that's the response that a lot of these people get when they go and start asking questions. And if they do pursue it, like I said, whoops, hey, was that a plane crash? Oh, look, you're caught with a hooker. You know what? That's the reality of the situation. And so that's why it has to be, and why Walter, I think, is right on, spot on when he says it has to be a grassroots local. You have to take control of your local venue. And once you start opening the books for your local venue, you see where the money goes. You see who's corrupt in politics. It starts spreading. And I guarantee the county next to you or the city next to you that sees that all of a sudden you're not paying any taxes, they're going to want this. They're going to be like, hey, let's get that. We need that over here. And it's going to spread. But someone has to be the first to do it.
Right. You know, I did Eustace Mullins' last interview before his death, and this was something that you know, he was really adamant before he died that Ron Paul was completely corrupt as well. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I called Ron Paul out in my in my documentary, actually, and Walter actually doesn't like it when you pick on individual people, and I'm like, you know, you gotta do this because Ron Paul he's kind of the man of the people.
He's like the Republican Jesus or something.
Right. Well, I mean, that's my first problem is that he's a libertarian posing as a Republican, which tells me that he's really just a Republican posing as a libertarian. But Ron Paul, basically my issue and why I have a problem with Ron Paul, there's two aspects here. One of them, the biggest one, is that he lies because he knows full well that the audit of the Federal – he's trying to get an audit of the Federal Reserve. He's trying to pass legislation that it says the audit of the Federal Reserve is going to go out to the Congress and all that. But the reality of the situation is that the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report is literally the audit of the Federal Reserve. I was looking at the new one that got posted for 2009 today. In fact, shows $11 billion in gold certificates and a $52 billion surplus within all of the, you know, the Federal Reserve banks. You're talking about you want the audit of the Federal Reserve. All you have to do is pull up the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for the Federal Reserve. It's that simple. And Ron Paul knows this because Walter has approached him about it and said, why don't you post this on your website? If you're as good a guy as you say you are, make this, you know, exposure knowledgeable. But we go back to, well, Ron Paul has a family. He's got a career. He's got a political career that he has to protect. You think if Ron Paul got up and started talking about the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report that he'd be anywhere in government the next election? No. He'd be gone. He'd have a heart attack because he's old enough to where they could just inject him with something and make him have a heart attack. That's the reality. So Ron Paul is a politician, no different than any other one. He just has a really good platform, and he's propped up by everyone as if he's Jesus. Not much different than Barack Obama was propped up as Jesus. You know, he's propped up the same way, but these people don't realize it. They just look at these pictures
and the one good candidate, Cynthia McKinney, is on the run, and they booted her out. You know,
well, that's gonna happen. That's why it has to be the people. Not, you know, I say forget government. Okay, let's just forget the government. You're never going to get anything from government. You're never going to change anything within government because government is a corporation. It's a private for-profit corporation. It's not interested in the people. In fact, one of the hardest things for people to get, I think, is that government doesn't really need the people anymore. government has grown in a way that is astronomically huge. It's so vast in its growth that it is now doing things to people that 30, 40 years ago the people would never have put up with. Okay? Government is so large and owns so much, owns your land, owns your property, owns the apartment building next to you is probably owned by government. Literally, they put those on the reports, actually, that it doesn't need the people. In fact, if we really go into conspiratorial stuff, you got to start considering that government doesn't want people to retire, because if they retire, then they start collecting benefits. So wouldn't it be there's two things that are in the government's best interest here. First of all, raise the retirement age to something ridiculous, and then also at the same time lower the life expectancy of people.
Right, okay? With all the sugar and the crap and the food, right, and all the vegetable oils and all that good stuff.
So yeah, there you go. You just connected the dots perfectly, because what's happening with Monsanto, what's happening with oil companies, what's happening with banks, the government owns them. They have controlling stock interest in banks, in Monsanto, in Walmart. Walmart is the largest company in South America. Okay? The government is letting all of this happen because it has controlling interest. It decides what's going to happen. It tells these companies.
Now, when you talk about government, though, you talk about the government as like an actual body, like it's got a soul and a heart, and it's Absolutely. Making these decisions. How do when we say the government, what are you meaning there?
Well, that's where the term collective government comes in, because keeping in mind that all of these investments are spread out through all of these, as I said, the estimate is 185,000 different corporations that are government. So, again, the corporate government standards, the corporate governance standards, is to proxy vote on corporate issues. And so they're all voting. Someone is telling them how to vote, in other words. So if over 100,000 different governments have stock in Microsoft, they're all going to vote the same way in order to assure that Microsoft is run in the best interest of its stockholders. Its stockholders are government, collectively, right? And that's where you get into who's pulling the strings, and that's the part that I honestly don't know. And I'm really not interested anymore. I'm not interested in the Rothschilds. I'm not interested in the Queen. I'm not interested in much anymore except my local venue and telling people to go to their local venues and change the laws and take this back.
Get them to take focus on the local stuff so that those at the top are effectively emasculated.
Exactly. And also to, go to your city council meetings, go to your county council meetings, bring in the comprehensive annual financial report, study it a little bit. The next documentary I'm going to put out is going to be a little explanation of how you can go through it as well. But, just see some of the funds and some of the information in there. You can go in there and you can say, it says here that you have $150 million that can be used to meet ongoing budgetary obligations with no connections to anything else. Why aren't you using that? And watch their eyes get wide open. Educate the people who are there at the county meetings, at the council meetings, because those are the people that actually care and are there at the meetings. And half the time it's a half empty room. But if enough people start showing up and demanding answers and demanding, why aren't you spending this money? Why aren't you using this to help us? Why are you doing this? Why are you hurting us? That's what needs to happen. And likewise, the law needs to be changed by the people, not by government. You don't go and you don't send an email or make a phone call to your legislative representative, because they work for the corporation. One lady had an interview with a guy who actually talked to some legislators who, once they got elected, were told that they are now being hired by a corporation. So really interesting stuff. But you don't do this with your current government. You do this within the people, and that's the American way, if you think about it. If you really think about it, that's the basis of America right there. Forget government. They're not going to help you. Do it yourself. So that's
right. Well, that's true. you know, and they would have rode in with shotguns and dragged them out and hung them somewhere too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you think about it too, the email thing, I'm like, are you serious? You're going to send an email to your representative? You think, first of all, do you think he's going to read it? No, he doesn't even read the bills that he signs. Why would he read your email? Second of all, with one click, those emails go in the virtual trash. Or they go into a file that keeps the emails for future reference, whatever. But they're not reading the emails. They're not reading your letters. And if they are, it's like some lower life form that's in government that's reading them, and it's not your representative.
Usually a college student trying to get college course credits or something
intern.
And they just copy and paste a canned answer that they've been fed over and over and over.
Exactly. Yeah, and so, I mean, basically what I'm trying to tell people is change your whole a function of thinking here, because this is reality. When you look at these reports, it is the reality of what is happening in government. Okay, the reality is that it's a corporate structure. You cannot ask a king who has a kingdom to pass a law that is going to hurt himself. It's not going to happen. Okay, and that's what government is. It's a kingdom. It's not necessarily run by a king, although we could get into the crown of England, but
right,
you know, but I mean, you're talking about,
or the city of London,
or the Vatican, which owns the city of London. But
you really get into De Beers and the whole Rhodes scholars and the Rhodes. Have you read Cecil Rhodes' Last Will and Testament? That's one of the key pieces to how they've put this whole thing together. You know.
I would like to read that because, you know, Cecil Rhodes was the Rothschild's right-hand hand
right.
guy.
I've got it on PDF. I'll have to email it to you
later.
Yeah,
definitely. You know, and as far as Cecil Rhodes, God, you should read some of his quotes are just like, oh, wow, that's pretty blatant of you. And the other thing I want to say about Cecil Rhodes, you know, diamonds are absolutely not
worthless.
They're worthless. They're not rare, people. Do not spend thousands of dollars on a diamond.
Every time I hear somebody, I just got engaged. My boyfriend just bought me a $10,000 diamond. It's like, really, did you know you can scoop those up off the beaches in Africa with buckets?
Right, and they're not rare. You even have Cecil Rhodes saying the only way to keep diamonds valuable are to, you know, I can't quote him exactly, but to keep them scarce, to keep the people thinking that they're scarce. We don't want other companies coming over here and
advertise them. Diamonds are our girls. And you got to do lots of advertising. Diamonds are a girl's best friend, right?
Oh, certainly. As long as the people are more interested in shiny objects than they are in what we're talking about today, we're in big trouble, you know?
You know, I used to have a cockatiel that really liked shiny objects.
And what happened?
I gave him away to a friend about 10 years ago or 15 years ago. He was too noisy, always squawking and wanting shiny things. You know,
I had one, but his interest was in revolving fans. And so he would always fly up into the ceiling fan. And so I eventually gave him away too. After he was mentally damaged, I will say it.
That's too bad. All right. So let's get into Delaware.
That tiny little state on the East Coast that has so much power. Delaware is an interesting thing. You know, it was the – correct me if I'm wrong, but it was the first state, correct?
I think that's correct.
So from what I understand, going into the more esoteric, I've seen several people have posted stuff that the IRS and that all these government corporations are actually incorporated in Delaware as well as private corporations, IRS, Federal Reserve, most of government, the United States Incorporated, that sort of thing, which is...
Well, you know, if you go to the Delaware.gov website, it says State of Delaware, the official website of the first state. I wonder if they have that trademarked.
There you go, first state. I know it's not because I know history, it's just because I saw that on their website probably. So, I mean, it makes sense that the government was incorporated within the state of Delaware. Absolutely, and we're talking federal government. But what's interesting about Delaware is that it's probably the most lenient, forgiving state when it comes to being a corporation. So if I'm a corporation and I'm planning on being an international or national corporation, chances are that I will incorporate in Delaware. So what we're saying is that 50% of all corporations and about 60% of the Fortune 500 in this country are actually incorporated in the state of Delaware. Now,
well, that's ironic that you say that, because I'm watching this little flash screen that the government has on the Delaware website, and right up there, one of the things that popped up, it says, "Incorporate in Delaware. Click here to learn more about it."
Yeah, well, you should learn more about it, and everybody should, because there's some really interesting laws as to why people incorporate in. You don't have to be a United States citizen to incorporate in Delaware. You don't have to be, well, shoot, technically, you don't even have to have a real name or identification that's American to incorporate in Delaware. You can be anonymous and incorporate in Delaware. It's like the most ridiculous corporate structure ever. But along those lines, and why so many corporations do go to Delaware to incorporate, is because they have very, very relaxed usury laws. Usury being the making of money off of money, or interest, or
right.
That sort of thing. So you got all your banks and all your companies that are financially intuitive are pretty much there. So what does that mean? Well, that means that a company in Delaware who is incorporated in Delaware, when it operates, when you're incorporated in one state, doesn't matter which state you're in, any other state that you operate in, you are considered a foreign corporation, because each state is an individual, you could call it an individual country. So if you're based in Delaware and you're operating in California, you're a foreign corporation in California. Now, California has usury laws. They say you can only charge this much on your credit cards. You can only charge this much interest for loans. You can only do this when it comes to usury. Okay, usury is a very bad thing. It's horrible.
Yes, and I've had Stephen Zarlinga from the American Monetary Institute on my show four times, and he's written a very thick compendium on the history of usury and money called "The Lost Science of Money."
Yeah, well, I mean, and I'm sure that, did you get into the origins of it coming from Judaism and Zionism and all that? Yeah,
yeah, there's a lot of that is in there as well.
Yeah, so I mean, it's another whole other subject, obviously. But so how this works is that as a foreign corporation, we'll just use California as an example, as a Bank of America or a Wells Fargo operating in California, but being incorporated within the state of Delaware, that corporation, even though it's operating in California, only has to operate under the rules, certain rules of Delaware. In other words, if California says, well, you can't charge more than 10% interest, and Delaware says you could charge however much interest you want, up to 30%, well, they only have to follow Delaware law while operating in California. And that is the harsh truth, the harsh reality of why so many corporations, over 50% of the corporations in the country, are incorporated in Delaware. Now, you'd think that Delaware would be an extremely wealthy, you know, collecting all this corporate taxes, but that's the other thing. They don't pay income tax in Delaware as a corporation. They pay very little tax at all in Delaware. And so the state of Delaware is not getting anything. The people are not getting anything from these corporations being incorporated within the state. It's absolutely unbeneficial to anybody but the corporations and the United States government, obviously. So, yeah, big problem, because any corporation that's working in your state does not have to follow your state's laws. I mean, that's bad.
Yeah, that's really bad. So how do we change Delaware? What can be done about Delaware?
Like I said, I'm not a person to be able to say what can change. The only viable solution that I have seen that can actually change this, like I said, is to get your people in your local venue the smallest of cities to the largest of states, and get the laws changed to locally. If you don't do that, then there's really nothing that's going to change, because otherwise you have to rely on the laws that are already in place, and those laws are beneficial, obviously, to corporations. So until we get together and band together and try something like Walter's Tax Retirement Fund, which, by the way, reads very much like the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence. It starts out with "We the people." We the people want this, 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 and this, and think that you're full of crap and that we're going to do this. Until we get the laws changed in our state or in our county, city, whatever, then nothing's going to change, because all we can do is send our little worthless emails to our politicians, right, who turn their nose up to us. So what can be done is for each state to change the law that says if a corporation is going to be operating within our state or our county or our city, it must follow this set of laws, which does not allow usury or anything else. That's the only thing I can think of. Because, again, we need law on our side, on the people's side, which right now it is not.
And for those people out there listening to this show thinking that they're going to go register a corporation in Delaware, this is your consciousness speaking. Don't.
Yeah, and again, that's exactly what I'm saying. Crisis of conscience. Think before you leap. Think before you see.
Use the trivium method,
yes,
people.
Yes, use the trivium. Sounds like the Force.
It is the Force.
Yeah, exactly. it's conscience.
It's the BS detector, you know? It slices right through the bullshit.
Do you have that detector on now? Do you think I'm spewing any BS right now?
I don't think you're spinning any BS. I think that there is a couple of places where you still have need to investigate further.
Absolutely.
But other than that, you know, I think you're well on target, and you speak very eloquently, and for what you have completed your research on, you do a fantastic job at presenting it.
Well, thank you, sir. I intend on, I think about it, and I'm 38 right now. I've got my whole life ahead of me, but I can't think of doing anything else, honestly, but learning, continuing to learn and continuing to perfect this and continuing to understand this until someone stops me. And until someone stops me, I'm going to keep putting out these documentaries.
All right. Let's get to people who are going to stop you. Let's talk about police and sheriffs. You discovered something recently. What was that?
Yes. This is probably the most important thing that I have uncovered, and I still, after doing all kinds of research, still don't comprehend the final aspect of it. But I want to tell you, because this is very important, because this could have already happened within your county. Let's just leave it at county, because that's really what it's about. We have a sheriff here. His name is Sheriff Jim Winder. He is the county sheriff. He is the one elected official of the sheriff's department, right? The county sheriff is a political office. It is an elected position, whereas all other police officers and people within government, the majority of them are appointed. And that's another very important aspect because, again, you elect one person as president of the United States. The entire federal government is appointed, okay? I mean, it's you have one elected official. That's it. That's all. Everyone else is appointed. So what we have here in Salt Lake County is the crime of the century. This is the most treasonous thing I've ever come across. And if anybody's familiar with Richard Mack and all of the importance of the county sheriff literally is the one person standing between the United Nations and the federal government and the county, okay? So if the federal government wants to do something within the county and the sheriff doesn't like it, he can say no, okay? The sheriff is a very, 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 if not the most important office in the county. And that's why when you elect a sheriff, you better really pay attention to what you're doing, okay? Let me tell you what's happened to the
You know what? I'm going to hook you up with Bob Tuscan so you can get on his show. And he wants to run for sheriff in his county for this very reason. I think armed with your information, be some good stuff.
Absolutely. He could use this as a platform, actually, because this is happening all over the country, which is why I want to share this. Okay, here's what happened. In Salt Lake County, the county sheriff's office was dissolved. Okay? The department that was the sheriff's department is completely dissolved. In its place was created something called the Unified Police Department. Okay, this is pretty much a private police force that takes the place of the sheriff's department. Okay? This Unified Police Department covers all incorporated and unincorporated areas within Salt Lake County. And we, you know, that's your cities that are incorporated and your cities that are not. A lot of people live in unincorporated areas within counties. Just depends on what type of municipality you
have. Right. I live in an unincorporated area here.
Well, you better fight with all your might to keep it that way, I'm telling you. Okay, so this actually came into effect, according to their website, on January 1st, 2010. Okay, so we have a new police force that replaced the sheriff's department. It is a private police force. Okay, the sheriff, Sheriff Jim Winder, and I believe that he campaigned against this, actually, and then, of course, he did it. But the sheriff was appointed the CEO, the chief operating officer, and the chief executive officer of the Unified Police Department. So we have an elected official who became chief executive officer of a private police force. Okay, you following me so far? This became a corporate entity. The word chief executive officer is a corporate term. Have no doubt that it is a private corporation. So it turns out that...
So a law enforcement officer is just an officer of the corporation enforcing the corporation's laws.
Exactly. They're code enforcement officers, not necessarily law, because law would mean that it's lawful. And this structure that we have is not lawful. It's not constitutional. It has nothing to do with God's law, meaning, the only crime that there really is either hurting somebody or their property. That's really the only crime there is. That's what God's law is. So this is all codes, statutes, fees, regulations. There's a whole long list of things that these guys are doing. They're not police officers in the form of protecting and serving the people. They protect and serve the corporation that they work for. For instance, the Salt Lake City Corporation police are there to enforce the code passed by the government of the Salt Lake City Corporation. It's simple as that.
And then the code is basically to milk the population for the corporation's profits.
Exactly, exactly. Every ticket that you get, every tax that you pay, tax is nothing more than revenue generation. It's a way to make money. That's what taxation is. That's what a fee is. That's what a ticket is. That's what a, anything that involves money. It's just nothing more than revenue generation. Don't think taxation is necessary or needed. It's a revenue generation. It's a way to make profit. Okay? So what we found out, according to the mayor's report, is that former sheriff of Salt Lake County, Aaron Kennard, joined Sheriff Jim Winder, the current sheriff, to report that groundwork for the Unified Police Department started more than 15 years ago. And what happened is that municipalities, the corporate structures, the municipal corporations became part owners of the equipment, the actual police equipment, which used to belong to the county and are now considered municipal assets instead of county assets. So let's see, the Unified Police Department then created what's called a special financing district. Okay, and I've been researching the special financing districts, and that's the part that I have trouble with. But it's called the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area, or SLVLESA. Now, it used part of Utah code to state that it could do this, and that Utah code is 17B-1-201, and that's on their website as well. Now, what we have to understand is what this district is, okay, from their own website, here's what it says. says the sole purpose of the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area is to provide funding for police services in the unincorporated areas of Salt Lake County. Okay, unincorporated areas of Salt Lake County. The Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area does not provide police service. Instead, it forwards revenues to the Unified Police Department, which provides law enforcement services to the unincorporated county. The Unified Police Department is responsible for all police operations. The Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area was created by unanimous vote of the Salt Lake County Council. The council appointed by Jim Bradley, Michael Jensen, Mayor Peter Caroon to serve as service area trustees, and Councilman Bradley serves as the chair. So what they've done is they've created, again, it's a special financing district. The district is not a tangible thing. It is simply a council of four people with the sheriff still CEO of the district or the Unified Police Department. So what they did, this was created in March of 2010. And what they did was they sent out letters to all of the homeowners and business owners and apartment complex owners within Salt Lake County unincorporated area, in other words, the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area, and they said, you must pay us $176, I believe it is, in order to have police protection. Okay? So everybody that owns a home, essentially, got this letter. And it was a nice letter. It said, we're sorry that we have to do this, but we're going to charge you this fee. We know you don't like it, but it's better than making it a property tax. And we, you know, we're trying to be nice. And they're lying to these people saying that they're underfunded for the police department, which is a complete lie. So basically, all these people got the letters. The next letter, which came out in, I think, June, said that if you don't pay this, we're going to attach it to your property tax. Okay, this is the city council, remember. So now the homeowners and business owners have a letter that says, okay, they have a bill, actually, that says we are going to charge you, we are charging you this amount of money plus late fees since you haven't paid it. If you pay it, we'll get rid of the late fees. If you don't pay it, it's going to be charged to your property tax. Now, what people have to understand about property tax, if you don't pay your property tax, your home will be taken from you. So the people in the unincorporated area of Salt Lake County, all of these cities that are not incorporated, now have to pay a fee that is attached to their property tax. And if they don't pay the property tax, the government will come in and take their home. Okay? So you could compare this to the federal government and the IRS. The federal government sends you a bill that says you have to pay federal tax. If you don't pay the federal tax, the IRS comes in and takes your home or takes whatever it needs to pay your tax. Likewise, the Unified Police Department sent a letter, the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area, which is nothing but a few people, sent a letter saying that these people must pay a new fee, which was not voted on. It was not, you know, no, the only people that approved it were the council. And if they don't pay it, the Unified Police Department is going to come, just like the IRS, and take your home. So compare this.
So what is your plan to fight them on this?
Well, I'm actually, it goes further than this. But my plan, technically, right now, I don't know. I think the best plan would be to somehow educate people, and the only way I can think to educate people on this is to have a recall, because the news would have to report on it. I mean, I can't imagine them not having it. But if I could somehow get a recall campaign for this for the sheriff, especially because he's committed treason by far, probably for the council and definitely for the mayor, because they did this, and people need to understand what it means. The whole police department is unified. And also multi-jurisdictional, meaning that a Salt Lake City police officer has all the jurisdiction he has in Salt Lake City in my city or unincorporated city.
Wow.
So yeah, it's crazy. The police.
So they've just massively increased their own power and control Absolutely. Over the whole region, and now they're telling everybody that they didn't have control over previously to pay up, or they're going to extort the money out of them.
Absolutely. Now this gets, and that's exactly what it is. It is extortion. This is compare this to gangland style protection money. If you come in to my store with a bat and say you're going to pay me this much for my protection, what's the difference? And if you don't do it, we're going to burn your store down, or you're going to burn your home down. Well, instead, they've perfected it to where if you don't pay it, they're going to take your home and make a profit off of selling it. So that's exactly what it is. It's extortion. Property tax is extortion. I mean, let's face it. If you don't pay it, your home gets taken, proving that you don't own your home, even if it's free and clear. But this gets worse, because – and this is the most important part, I think – The district, the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area, again, those four people, they're not doing anything. Instead, all of the billing and everything that's happening within that district, all these letters that are going out, all of the enforcement actions and all, are being handled by a private company incorporated within the state of California. That company is called NBS. And their website is nbsgov.com.
NBS, how ironic.
nbsgov.com. So the .com tells you it's not a government, you know,
right.
entity, obviously. And the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area is a .org, which is also not a government entity. It's a private thing. So what's happening is this private company in the Southern California area, it's doing all of the billing and all of the fee collection and creating the fees, and the government gets together with them and talks about it and says, well, what do you think we could charge these people without them getting too upset, without them, and then we slowly build it, and they give you a whole perspective on how you can start this special financing district. If you want to study special financing district, you can look it up and see what's happening. What I've been finding is that most of them are actually floating bonds, and these companies like NBS are actually funding the bonds, and the collateral for the bond. In other words, if the government doesn't pay the bond back, they're putting the people's homes and property and city property up as collateral for the bonds that they're floating in order to do, say, build a new mall, repair a parking lot, that kind of thing. That's the reality of the situation is they're taking your home or our homes. It could be in your place. I don't know. They're all over the place, these special financing districts, special districts. And they're putting your property up for collateral in order to float a bond and do special projects. And that sort of thing, and this sort of thing, where they're charging a fee for police protection. So, again, a private corporation in California is essentially governing the police protection of the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area. So you want to talk about the problem with the corporate structure. That is it right there. This is the most frightening thing I've ever said, because the reality of the situation is I used to be able to call a sheriff. If my local police gave me any hardships or did something that they're not supposed to do, who do you call? You call the sheriff. You call the sheriff of your county, and he comes out and he corrects the situation, or you hope so anyway if he's not corrupt. Now I don't have a sheriff I can call. All I have is a private police force that has nothing to do with protecting
the
service.
And the CEO of a corporation acting as sheriff.
As sheriff. And an elected official, which is the worst part, because, I you know, as far as I can tell, by law, there's absolutely no way that this guy could possibly take that position as CEO of a corporate entity like that. It's an elected position. So like I said, the only thing I can think of to do right now is first get this out, and I'm going to put it in the documentary. But
I would write this up and send it out to even all the corporate media as well.
Yeah, well, I have it written up in a script for the most part, and I keep thinking I should put it on my blog because, it's very important.
Not only put it in your blog, but send it out everywhere to all the media outlets. Some reporter at some desk will – pick it up and, maybe you'll get it printed without somebody even
possible. I must say, though, I've lost faith in most of the media, but for obvious reasons.
Obviously, yes.
Controlled. You must control the propaganda arm in order to control society.
I have a TV in the other room that's sat there unplugged in the corner for 9 months.
Yeah. Well, good for you. I admit that I will turn it on every once in a while just to go brain dead. Because it actually is kind of soothing for me just to go get lost in it, because otherwise I'm thinking about this stuff.
every time I turn it on, I feel like I'm burning brain cells. They talk about killing brain cells with drugs. Give me a break. It's the TV that burns them up,
Exactly.
Everybody that I know who does, well, except for like meth or something, that does like entheogens, they're typically far more aware and enlightened than their counterparts, I would say.
I would agree with you there, honestly. I have been sort of anti-TV for a very long time. It was tough for me, especially because I was in Hollywood and I was making movies and making these games. And so it was very tough not to want to watch and keep up with the latest trends and all that stuff. So I'm actually glad I'm out of that particular business, but it certainly led me in the right path. I will say that.
All right, Clint, what is the single most important concept that you would like people to take away from this program?
Well, I gotta be honest with you. I want to put out my respect to people like you and people like I had another interview today with a woman named Deanna Spingola, who's on Republic Broadcasting. There are some very good sites and radio programs out there. After listening to your stuff, I actually can't wait to delve into more if I can only find the time. But the most important thing is, I've come to realize after listening to years of Alex Jones and shock jocks of the like, that we need to separate ourselves from people like Alex Jones. And I'd love to get on Alex Jones and talk about this stuff, because he's had Walter Burian on there before, but I have to call out the truth about what I think about Alex Jones, because I've caught him in so many lies.
Well, not only that, all of the selling gold and all of that stuff, and it's like the gold is controlled by the same groups that control the diamonds. It's all a sham, and the more fear they can propagate, the more they drive up the value of gold, because now people are buying it. And the more profit they continue to make on it.
Absolutely.
And all of these shock jocks and fear-mongering types like Jones, they're making a killing off of these gold advertisements on their shows and all over their websites.
Well, and something else that's interesting, I was looking at the Federal Reserve CAFR, and they actually buy and sell gold certificates at a set price by law. And the set price is actually $49.29. So when they buy a gold certificate, which represents one troy ounce of gold, they're paying $49 by law, and that's not changing.
So the other $850 stacked on top is just.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. In fact, if anybody can tell me, I'd like to know. By the way, for people that want to, ask questions or anything, my email is clint@caffer1.com, C-L-I-N-T, clint@caffer1, C-A-F-R-1. I don't know what to make of that. I've heard of stuff like this before where the actual value of gold is not what it appears to be, but I don't understand. Why is the Treasury giving the Federal Reserve gold certificates while holding that gold in their accounts at the value of $49? It doesn't make sense to me. I don't really understand it, except to think that that's the real value of gold, and that what we're seeing in the market is something completely a scheme, a Ponzi scheme. And that's one of my greatest fears, is that people are going to invest all their money in metals, and then it's going to be, you know, as it's based, the value is based on the dollar. So I don't know what to think of this. It's really I got to find this out, because it's killing me. But Alex Jones, what I want to tell people is that the only way to get to the point where you start comprehending the way things actually work is to stop listening to people like Alex Jones. And I hate to say that, because honestly, he'll get mad at me, and he will probably do everything in his power to make sure that I'm subjugated and not, you know, not propagated, and he won't promote my video, and he won't do anything to help me out, because he wants to be king of the hill. And I, for one second, don't think that he's part of a much greater plan, you know, again, getting into conspiracies. But he's lied so many times, outright lies that just need to be, you know, made public. And I guess what I would say to people is, start doing your own research, just like you do, Jan, and just like all these people that you listen to. Don't trust them. Don't trust me. Don't trust Alex Jones, especially. But start looking into this, because what you're going to find is that a lot of these radio show hosts out there are what you would refer to as gatekeepers. You're never going to get to something like Zionism, for instance, if you listen to Alex Jones, because he's very protective. His lawyers are the same, the Bronfmans, the same lawyers that are, I mean, it's just a whole mess. But you must start looking into the reality.
Yeah, you know, and people really need to wake up and realize, you know, and I had Professor Shlomo Sand on my show last year, who he's the author of the book Inventing the Invention of the Jewish People, and he proves that there is no Jewish race, that that this entire notion of it was created in the 1700s. And you know, he's got some really interesting work in there, but you know, there's, people have to realize that criticizing Israel and Zionism has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. It's it has nothing to do with that. Not only that, but if you look in any, like if you open up a good 1911 dictionary and look up the word Semite in there, it'll say Arab. So to me,
yeah, exactly.
You know, the people who are persecuting the Palestinians and trying to purge them out so that they can bring in their new, you know, the return of Yahweh and the New World Order and stuff like that, that right there is the epitome of anti-Semitism.
Well, I would agree with you. I would go step. I actually wrote a really long entry called Zionism 101, and Zionism 101, the Zionist Israeli government of the United States, because literally in the Bush cabinet there was 32 dual Israeli citizens sitting in the cabinet, and then in the Obama cabinet we have the same thing.
And so, you know, and where does their loyalty lie, well, then, if they're, wow, really?
Exactly. So you've got Rahm Emanuel, who's a dual Israeli citizen. He's the chief of staff, which technically is the most powerful position in government, federal government. And he has been called by several prominent Jewish Israeli people the number one Mossad agent in America. He chose to serve in the Israeli army instead of the American army. Okay, that's who your chief of staff is. Anybody that says Obama is Muslim is ridiculously stupid, because everybody in his cabinet is Zionist. You got Joe Biden. Joe Biden, this is a direct quote from
right.
Joe Biden.
Yeah.
All right? Yeah, I mean, ridiculous. Of course I'm a Zionist. You don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard him say that. I've seen the video of that.
Absolutely. And so I included all that in my blog, and I recorded it, actually. It's like a three-hour entry that I recorded because I knew people wouldn't read it. So my blog, by the way, is realityblogger.wordpress.com.
Right, and what are your – give all your websites and addresses and that stuff.
Realityblogger with one G, .wordpress.com. All kinds of articles up there. I've been writing for about 2 years now on – so much stuff. Reality, obviously. And then thecorporationnation.com is the site where you can watch The Corporation Nation and leave comments, ask questions, that kind of thing. It's not that fancy. It's just a place to store the movie and that kind of thing. And again, my email is clint@kaffer1.com. If you go to kaffer1.com, you know, again, I'm not affiliated with Walter. He was kind enough to give me an email so that I could separate this from my personal email. But go to kaffer1.com, and right on the front page there, right just a little bit down, is Walter's information. And again, I'm a neophyte novice, and I know this much. You wanna get a real perspective on what's going on, you know, from a professional. That's the guy, Walter Burian. His phone number is on there. You can call him. He takes everybody's phone calls. Usually answers emails. So because he, you know, like I said, he wants this to change. He wants people to call him and start helping him try to do this tax retirement fund thing, because he can't do it alone. It's not something you can do alone. It's something that you have to go and talk to people about and get the people to say, hey, this is a good thing. We need to do this. We need to change around the government. So by all means, you know, all those websites, especially Kaffer1, CAFR1.com, you can go in and read all Walter's stuff. Again, not the greatest of websites, but you can get an idea. My suggestion is first to watch my movie, because I did this strictly so that you can be educated. I haven't made a red cent off of this, and I don't plan to. So.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Clint, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, I thank you, and I one last word of kudos. A lot of radio stations that are corporate will not talk about this subject, and I commend you for both talking about Zionism and talking about this comprehensive annual financial report. It is the most important thing that we can focus on as people in a government, because it is the government structure. It's the basic accounting system of government. If you don't know this, you know nothing about your government. So thank you, Jan, very much.
All right, you're welcome, Clint.